A winter's day in a deep and dark December, I am alone, gazing from my window to the streets below on a freshly fallen silent shroud of snow. I am a rock, I am an island. I built walls, a fortress deep and mighty that none may penetrate. I have no need of friendship. Friendship causes pain. Its laughter and its loving I disdain. I am a rock. I am an island. Don't talk of love. Well, I've heard the words before. It's sleeping in my memory, and I won't disturb the slumber of feelings that have died. If I never loved, I never would have cried. I am a rock. I am an island. I have my book and my poetry to protect me. I am shielded in my armor, hiding in my room, safe within my womb. I touch no one and no one touches me. I am a rock. I am an island. And a rock feels no pain. And an island never cries. I seem to be in a Simon and Garfunkel mood tonight. That one was one of my favorites back when I was in high school, which was just a couple of years back, you know. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com and revolution.radio. Not to mention our own site, newdream.us, where you can also find our archive shows. Remember, Revolution Radio is listener-supported, and they deserve your support. So head over to their site and make a donation. You'll be glad you did. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Karen Katowski, Michael Annis, Julius Alafon, Frank Cordero, and Phil Ferruccio. So this Thursday evening, we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Duluth, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Port Orange, Florida, in Mount Jackson, Virginia, in Denver, Colorado, in Yaoundé, Cameroon, and wherever you are. The final book in the Geronimo's Revenge series is now available. Revolution will not be planned in the checkout line at Walmart or in the line to punch out on Friday afternoon or at happy hour. It's all right here. The Geronimo's Revenge Trilogy from CWG Press. Crusher versus the Empire, Crusher in Wonderland, and now Geronimo's Revenge. All three books in the series available at Amazon. The May issue of Penn Magazine is now available online at pennmagazine.us. America, the Evil Empire. Penn Magazine is named in honor of Penn Jones Jr., one of the first honest researchers into the John Kennedy murder by the U.S. Deep State, which was the opening big event leading to the murders of Martin King, Robert Kennedy, Oklahoma City, 9/11, Sandy Hook, Boston, San Bernardino, Orlando, Las Vegas, Parkland, etc. Go here to read Penn Magazine, PENN Magazine.us. Issues also available in groovy flip page format at archive.org. Mike Palachek, editor, Chuck Gregory, publisher. My recommended, an article called Where is the Shame by Paul Craig Roberts. Find it at informationclearinghouse.info, an excerpt. Now that the Trump, May, and Macron regimes have proven beyond all doubt that they are lawless war criminal regimes, what is next? Will the Russian president and foreign minister continue to speak of our Western partners and seek common ground with proven lawless war criminals, what would that common ground be? How can other governments accept the U.S., U.K., and French governments that intentionally lied about a Russian chemical attack on the Skripals and about a Syrian chemical attack on Douma, risking a third world war and then themselves attacking Syria on the basis of a transparent lie unsupported by any evidence? How exactly do you conduct diplomatic relations with war criminals? You don't. You put them on trial. Why aren't these three on trial? The reason is that the world has been conditioned, like Pavlov's dogs, to expect the West's war crimes as ordinary common features of life. The West's crimes are protected by precedents established by decades of failing to hold the West accountable. The West has squatter's rights in committing unaccountable war crimes. Where is the Shame? By Paul Craig Roberts. Find it at informationclearinghouse.info.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio with It's the Empire, Stupid.
Good evening, Working Stiffs. Being its 50th anniversary of a lot of dramatic events, let me talk about 6 months in 1968, a drastic awakening. 50 years has flown by for many baby boomers. So much has transpired, and yet the first 6 months in 1968 were the foundation of my current political awareness. I was a freshman in college then, doing my best to survive in a much more demanding scholastic environment. Brooklyn College at that time was a tough school to not only get into, but to stay in. The transition from high school to college, for me, was not easy. Maybe it was the fact that for the first time academically, the students weren't just walked through the curriculum. Now we had to grasp the assignments that were literally thrown at us by five different instructors. We seemed to be left to our own devices for the first time educationally. Ironically, this was parallel to how I reacted to what was gnawing at me culturally. Dylan's words were so appropriate, weren't they always, that the times they are a-changing. Now here was I, a small fish in a college bowl of over 40,000 students. All I seemed to care about in January of 68 was A, to get through the curriculum with passing grades, B, to play for the freshman baseball team, and C, to meet girls. As an aside to this story, let me say that a few months earlier, I actually decided to join the Marine Reserves as a way to delay this new college drama. And why not? I knew that the Reserves and the National Guard were the last ones to ever be sent to that dreaded place called Vietnam. My neighbor across the street had a new boyfriend who just returned from what he referred to as the NAM, and his story scared the shit out of me. He painted a picture that was 180 degrees from the recruitment commercials and posters floating around. I figured that the Marine Reserves could make a man out of me while keeping me from having to slosh through what many called the shit. After completing the written and medical tests, I was given my instructions to report on a Sunday morning for deployment to Paris Island boot camp. They told me what to pack, not much, and what time to report. On this Sunday morning in question, my dad was making me breakfast at about 6 a.m., when the phone rang. It was a recruiting sergeant. He read from a communique from the President of the United States saying that, effectively immediately, all new reserve units are hereby canceled until further notice. Sorry, son, you're not going. Later in the month of January into early February, the Viet Cong began their Tet Offensive in South Vietnam. They rattled the shit out of our military as they attacked deep inside Saigon and other supposedly secure areas. Then Walter Cronkite, America's voice of reason newscaster, the most trusted media figure at the time, gave his famous closing statement saying, in effect, that the war was unwinnable. Senator Eugene McCarthy, a Democrat, was running for president in opposition to President Johnson and, of course, the war. When McCarthy, who had attracted tens of thousands of young people to his campaign, almost defeated Johnson in the New Hampshire primary, this marked the end of LBJ's reign. Soon after that, Robert Kennedy entered the race as well. Now, Johnson knew that Kennedy would most likely get the nomination from him, so he gave his March 31st famous, "I shall not seek or accept the nomination of my party for president." Things were changing so fast in just a few short months. Well, that was nothing. In early April, Martin Luther King Jr. was in Memphis to support the sanitation strike by the predominantly black workers there. He then gave his famous speech that actually foreshadowed his murder by saying that he did not know if he would make it to the promised land with them. Shortly after that, Martin Luther King was slain while standing on the balcony of his Memphis motel. The blend of sadness and rage resonated throughout our country and most of the world. I was now just beginning to open myself up to things outside of my orbit of self-interest. What the hell was going on? Within a little over 2 months, Bobby Kennedy, as we young folks referred to him, was then murdered after winning what many believe was his ticket to the White House, the California primary. On my FM radio station that morning in June, they played the Jackie DeShannon song, What the World Needs Now is Love, as I greeted the stifling heat of the late New York City spring, as somber as ever. Thank goodness that I had read Jim Garrison's October 67 Playboy interview on the JFK assassination, and I was open to the idea of conspiracy theories. I surmised that the two killings, MLK and RFK, had to be connected to what Garrison had been investigating, what we now refer to as the deep state. My 18 years of political virginity had its cherry broken. Over the years, with some pauses for business, divorce, and its sordid craziness, I slowly reached the plateau of understanding where I stand now. Again, to reiterate, it was those 6 months in 1968 that opened my eyes to what I now hold so evident. We live in a military-industrial empire that takes no prisoners, only enemy combatants. Thank you.
And now it's time for Revolution College Underground Night School in the basement of the abandoned humanities building. Thursdays. The course description, what the hell is going on around here? Vince Lombardi.
Real change can come through knowledge of what the FBI and CIA are doing to this country through propaganda. They've done it for decades all over the world. Why not here? Especially here. The American system needs to be overhauled. We know that. What we need is a nonviolent revolution. The biggest battle is being fought with information. The American people are an incredible untapped force for good, but they don't really know much of anything about what's really going on. So what needs to happen is the base work for revolution. Awareness. We just don't know enough that we need a revolution, that it can come about through knowledge. Even though that might sound boring at first. And we're doing this for that very purpose, because the world is reaching a point where we really need to do something. The battle of ideas is percolating below the surface. It is a battle the corporate state is steadily losing. An increasing number of Americans are getting it. Once ideas shift for a large portion of a population, once the vision of a new society grips the popular imagination, the old regime is finished. That's where we are headed.
Tonight's Revolution College lesson. It's a very dangerous time in our country's history right now. People are starting to be very afraid. People are talking in whispers. We are very much living in a climate of intimidation and fear. And this very much is a silencing tactic so that we are starting to self-censor. Very Orwellian times. The American people have been playing a game of pretend with ourselves. We are propping up a collective delusion where we are not addressing the elephant in the room because it scares people and people don't know what to do about it. Since 2001, when the towers came down, this country, instead of keeping our wits, we were subjected to a very deliberate propaganda campaign, a fear-mongering campaign, a disinformation campaign. We got swept up in this mantra of patriotism and this threat. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. So thus, you become the enemy. You have to disallow the laws of physics to believe the official story of 9/11. We still, to this day, talk about 9/11 under our breath. We've gone along with all these massive rights grabs against us. Anybody who has investigated it knows the official story is a lie. It has nothing to do with right or left. It has to do with keeping our heads so we can see what's before our very eyes. Every supposed one of the 256 passengers on 9/11 paid for their tickets in cash on the morning of 9/11. Not one used a single credit card, and there are no electronic receipts from anyone or any company anywhere in the world. Why? There were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. except for the supposed ATA and all of his massive incriminating evidence on a supposed suicide flight. Not one single supposed passenger parked a car at any airport on 9/11. Not one. Why? There were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the U.S. government spends billions of dollars a year on infiltrating truth groups and forums, suiciding activists, and staging and writing media propaganda around the world is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the U.S. military owned media outlets like GE and Westinghouse, who own NBC and CBS, will never expose their own crimes of conspiracy to murder is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the U.S. government set up the Homeland Security Agency, TSA, Patriot Act, wiretapping, torture through confessions and renditions, all to keep you quiet and scared about 9/11 is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason Rosie O'Donnell was fired from TV for mentioning the WTC-7 collapse, which would immediately expose 9/11 as some form of controlled demolition, is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason hundreds of so-called terrorist training drills like Tripod 2 and Vigilant Guardian were taking place on 9/11 at the exact time of the plane crashes was for plausible deniability because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that none of the voice data recorders, flight data recorders, or black boxes had serial numbers, a first in aviation history, and it happened four times on the same day is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that every TV interview on the day of 9/11 was given by military-owned media outlet personnel is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that all the buildings and locations on 9/11 appear to have been destroyed by some form of demolition or directed energy weapon is because there was no jet fuel, because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the U.S. government allocated only $3 million to investigate all of 9/11, the Lewinsky scandal got $50 million, is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason NORAD stood down on 9/11 to immediately intercept the planes was because there were no planes to shoot down, because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason every video filming the Pentagon was immediately confiscated, 80-plus, was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the command procedure to shoot down a rogue plane was changed just weeks before 9/11 to having let Donald Rumsfeld's permission first and then was changed back immediately the day after 9/11 to the pilot's discretion was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that none of the 256 passengers except ATA drove and parked their own cars at any airport on 9/11 was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that not one single video exists of any person except ATA at any airport in any way from any of the planes of 9/11 is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. We'll see you next Thursday night for the next session of Revolution College Underground in the Abandoned Humanities Building. And back to you, Chuck.
And now, cue the Rimsky-Korsakov. And now for another episode of Professor Rutherford B. Roswell's Conspiracy Corner. We find Professor Rutherford P. Roswell sitting at home, getting ready to begin his weekly podcast from his basement. He has his computer and his headset and professional-looking microphone, with the fireplace glowing in front of him, and his English setter, Apollo, lying on the carpeted floor, feet straight in the air, as sound asleep. Professor Roswell checks the time on the computer, sips his drowsy time tea, swivels in his chair, and draws the Crown Royal single malt from the glass case, turns back, sprinkles a dash into the tea, and sets the bottle on the floor near his feet. Around him on the walls are photos of Roswell and the important people he has interviewed over the decades. He receives an email notification from the network telling him the show will start soon. He smiles as he types salutations to the many listeners now showing up in the chat room from around the world. Moose Lake. Hello. Fairbanks. Hi there, all. Vienna. Hello. Rome. Dubuque. Bozeman. Bombay. Bear Creek. Sandy Holler. Hello, hello. Welcome. Hello.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And now with your host, Professor Rutherford P. Roswell, it's time again for Conspiracy Corner, sponsored by Drowsy Time Key, because sometimes it's the best you can do. It's all you can do. You did your best. Just hold some hot tea in your tired hands close to your chest and slowly fall asleep. Sleep, sleep. Maybe put the hot cup on the desk. Sleep, sleep. Drowsy Time Key, forget about it and sleep.
You. Stop whatever it is that you're doing, because it really doesn't matter. As long as the persistent lie about the JFK, RFK, and MLK murders persists in this country, nothing you do, working out, going to work, eating, sleeping, talking, none of it matters. It really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. None of it matters. You do not matter. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to all. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get right to it, shall we? The reason the Pentagon was conducting a mass casualty exercise, on the day of 9/11 at the Pentagon, involving a plane crashing into it, was once again for a weak, plausible deniability excuse, because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the doors, fire escapes, observation decks, and all access to the top WTC's 1 and 2 buildings was closed and chained up on Monday 9/10/01 was because survivors could talk, because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason Mayor Giuliani was conducting Operation Tripod 2 at Pier 92 rather than his new multiple million dollar bunker inside WTC 7 on Monday 9/10/01, which involved terrorist attacks on the WTCs, and then the same exact people were then in charge of 9/11? Well, it was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the FBI released the names, addresses, photos, religious beliefs, whereabouts, affiliation, professional connections, flight training schools, nationalities, personal histories, ages, visa status of all the hijackers within days of 9/11, when Unabomber took 17 years, is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge, who would then head a new agency called Homeland Security, said that the WTC debris would be buried at CDI's smelting plant, which was purchased just months before 9/11 in Pennsylvania. No debris went oversized or to China, for example. It was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. Even though it was illegal, Giuliani banned all photography and video of the WTCs after the attacks, which clearly showed serious problems with the official stories, because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason Osama bin Laden denies any connection to wrongdoing and basically says the U.S. government and military are sick and murderous for their own gains is because he had nothing to do with 9/11. There were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason there were serious problems with all the videos showing planes on 9/11 is because there were no commercial planes.
Conspiracy Corner, sponsored by Drowsy Time Tea, because sometimes it's the best you can do. It's all you can do. You did your best.
TheSlips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now for another episode of The Adventures of Orson B. Riddle, crisis actor of Paducah. Orson sits on his cement front step smoking to watch traffic, but there is no traffic. Inside on the walls above the TV and Xbox in a brown frame is his membership certificate to the Crisis Actors Guild, and on the kitchen table, he still has to mail it yet, is his membership application to the Propaganda Movie Actors Association. His suitcase lays wide open on the bed because he just got home from Florida, and you can't really see the stickers he has collected from Oklahoma, Texas, California, New York, Boston, Connecticut, Nevada. Orson B. Riddle usually gets 1, 2, or maybe 3 days at home until it's time to pack his makeup kit, head bandages, prosthetics, and go to the next big event. For 3 years, he worked at Walmart, and then he saw this ad on Craigslist, and he's never looked back. He's got his laptop open and he's reading, even though he's been told to only watch TV for his news. He squints his eyes as he reads. The reason there will never be a single piece of verified debris from any of the four planes, from any of the four locations on 9/11, is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that no engines, no tail sections, no seats, no fuselage, no luggage, and nothing from any of the planes has ever been found and verified through a serial number is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason there are massive problems with the takeoff records of the four flights on 9/11 is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that not one penny has been paid from insurance companies to replace the planes themselves is because they pay only for verifiable debris and none has ever been found is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason Bush threatened congressmen to never investigate 9/11, then delayed the investigation 18 months, then handpicked the commission members, had commission members quit because they said the commission was a fraud because they were never going to be allowed to inspect the plane wreckage because of national security, and then told them to never cross the line with regards to plane investigations is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. Senator Paul Wellstone paid with his life. He demanded to verify the plane debris. That's why he was killed. Orson goes inside for his cigarettes, walking right past the TV on full blast, as it's supposed to be, then comes back out and continues to read on his computer. Join us next week for yet another episode of Orson B. Riddle, Crisis Actor of Paducah, sponsored by Quick Dry Oats. Hardened to a cement block in your stomach within minutes, because you never know when you're going to get a good hard kick in the gut. We're there for you on the job, on the weekend, even when you sleep. Because these days, you really never know when the big hit is going to come. Now, do you? We're Quick Dry Oats of Minneapolis. Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, from the Des Moines Catholic Worker. And Chuck visited with Frank earlier, and we're going to get to hear that conversation right now.
Yo, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank.
How you doing?
I'm good. I can't believe it's Thursday already, huh?
It's, I felt like I just talked to you last week, but it was a quick week.
It was.
So here I am. You do know that about the mistrial.
Yes, you told us about
good.
That. Yeah.
Okay, so then not much more is going on. We're told that the prosecutor wants to do a retrial, and they want three different separate trials. So they're really blowing a lot of BS at us. But I don't think it'll hold. It really doesn't matter. We're coming May 19th, Armed Forces Day. We're going to do a second annual rally and risk arrest scene out there, and I'm going to be one of the folks risking arrest. I'm going to do the Dorothy Day thing that the Catholic Workers did in the 50s regarding the air raid drills in New York, the yearly self-defense, or what do you call it, national defense air raid drills, where people had to go into shelters and or stay off the streets or break the law. And the worker people proactively gathered and got others to join them in a protest for a number of years across City Hall whenever this happened. Hundreds were arrested through the years. Months were served in jail. And they finally stopped having these silly, ridiculous air raid drills in New York, because everybody knows no surviving a nuclear weapon in Manhattan. Get real. Okay. Yeah. Other than that, then they, the thing was that the Catholic Workers got arrested, and they didn't pay bail. And when they got in front of the judge, they pled guilty. And they said they'd rather do jail time and then pay fines. And the jail time was for the penance for the Saki. Well, hell, there's a lot of penance I can do for those killed by the drone command mission that's going on at Iowa in Des Moines. So that's what I'm doing. It's kind of a Catholic Worker thing, but we want others to show up. And we're making an effort to get some clergy to publicly speak out about this scene here. I mean, it's the tight lip. I mean, this place here used to be a progressive city when it came to this sort of stuff. Pastors, priests, the bishops, a very progressive scene here in the 70s and 80s. That's all gone, and there's no good reason for it. We're in the heart of American fascism, folks, in Iowa. Nice, friendly fascism, but it's fascism nonetheless. And on the other end of it, like all such empires, the people who are suffering the most are the ones underneath the pyramid, in whom we dominate from afar.
Yeah.
And now we kill from a computer stall on the south side of Des Moines.
Hey, what?
Am I crazy? Is this, I'm going nuts, but no one seems to understand. Is this just old age? My uncles were like this, you know, they just knew the world was going crazy. They were right, of course, but I don't know what to say. What do you think?
I think the world's going crazy, but I'm not sure it hasn't always been going crazy.
Oh, I got no trouble. Literature is clear about that. Yes, of course. if it wasn't going crazy, but then there'd be no good stories. Okay, we got the stories, and the stories were written so we can learn lessons, and we seem to just keep repeating these dumb things.
Yeah.
So, and the planet is telling us in its own way, at a life force, all of us are at risk, and every kid knows this. And billionaires have kids. Hmm. Everybody has kids.
Yeah.
And we're all in this together right now. Yeah. Yeah, got to figure a way. Yeah. And they certainly don't need leadership from white males from the U.S. What they need from us is examples of service and sacrifice.
Indeed.
Yeah, because we already told our kids how to make money, and that was such a low ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's my rant and rave. I made a kick-ass turkey vegetable stew, you know, cross between soup and casserole.
Yeah.
And it was tasty, and I had it to bone it. I mean, I was pretty proud of it. I bragged it up. A lot of mushrooms.
Oh,
people would have liked it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good.
Yeah. And now I'm working on the 13th annual Bishop Phil Berrigan Beg Letter. This is the extra fundraiser I do for my house here at the Phil Berrigan House. But I have not got a postcard from anybody giving me their address if they want to be put on the newsletter here. So come on, folks out there in Radio Land, you write to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, P.O. Box 4551, Des Moines, Iowa, 50305. And just say, attention, Frank, and put a mailing address on there. You'll never regret it. If you put an email address on, I'll send you a listserv giving you updates about the Catholic Worker. How about that for a commercial? Is that all right, Chuck?
That's all right. Maybe you should tell
them. Thank you.
Why don't you tell them your email address, and if they're too lazy to write a letter in a snail mail, maybe they can write an email.
Oh, that'd be great. All right, listen, folks, listen up, children. It's Frank, FRANK dot Cordero, CORDA. R-O at gmail.com. Easy squeezies.
All right.
Love to hear from folks. Hey, thanks, Chuck. Have a good day, buddy.
Frank, hey, you too. Talk to you
thanks,
next.
God bless. Bye. Bye.
In 2008, when we started the New American Dream website, and in 2011, the radio show, the premise has always been that there are no wrong questions. And what that meant was nobody is talking about things that are important. Nobody asking any questions. Please question this bullshit. And we should not feel we are doing anything wrong by asking questions. Those should be allowed, even encouraged. And if we are allowed to ask all the questions we have, and if there were somebody willing to listen and provide answers, there would be no need for despair or dysfunction. We have the proof, of course. Sandy Hook, Boston, Oklahoma City, JFK, RFK, King, Las Vegas were operations set up by the U.S. government and others, and by inference, every single one of the others, San Bernardino, LAX, Charlottesville, Orlando, the Wellstone murder, and at least a dozen others. Have you read William Bloom and John Perkins and Douglas Valentine regarding the incredible dirty trick psyops the CIA and FBI have done over the decades around the world to undermine any leader who tries to work for his or her people? Of course they would do the same thing here, especially here. The things we accept as real are fake, and the things we think are ridiculous are myths are real. We give mountains of money to the military to expand the empire and to kill and to gain even more wealth for the already filthy rich. We don't even know we are living as part of an empire, good Americans, good Romans, and we do all we can to scratch and survive and live our lives while meanwhile, it's a big deal. It's a whole enchilada. It's your parents' lives, your children and grandchildren. We must pay half of our tax dollars to the military while our bridges and roads collapse under our feet while we worry and whisper, why can't we have health care? Why? Or don't think about it. Get busy as usual with your day in a dozen routine ways and not think about what all this means. What is the true reality of your life, your world? I do that all the time, try to escape, but there's nowhere to go. I've looked. And by the way, we didn't go to the moon either. And yet we believe in football. We will sit for hours and through hundreds of brain-melting commercials. The new American dream, not of new homes and toasters, but of becoming the kind of people we always thought we were. That is what the world needs. That is what the world is demanding of us. Right here, right now, we are the ones. Our next guest of the show is Karen Katowski. Karen Katowski joins us each month from Mount Jackson, Virginia. She's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. She was stationed at the Pentagon. Her office was there on the day of 9/11. She has run for Congress. She's a radio show host. I don't think that's still going right now. She's a writer. You can find her stuff at lourockwell.com or ORG. I'm not sure. Anyway, we're going to try and contact Karen Katowski right now in Mount Jackson, Virginia.
Hello.
Well, hello, Karen. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream radio show, and you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Great. Great. Good to be here. I wanted to talk about a couple things in the news today or this week, and they're kind of different, but they speak to things that are important to me. Anyway, I guess there was a ruling. Apparently, up in New York City, in a bar, a guy came in who's wearing a Trump hat, an active Trump supporter. He had a Make America Great hat on in a bar in New York City, and they said, we will not serve you. You need to leave, and they made him leave, which is interesting because Starbucks did something like that too. But this guy wanted to buy. He wanted to spend his money. They wouldn't take his money at this bar. They said, we don't want you or your kind in here. Basically, your political views are not what we want, not part of our atmosphere, and so goodbye. You have to leave. And so the guy who was kicked out sued and brought his case to court, and the court ruled, and I can't remember which particular court it was, obviously stayed in New York somewhere, but the court ruled that this was absolutely part of the business owner's prerogative to serve who he wanted to serve, the freedom of association, the First Amendment right of association that the bar owner has, trumped, hate to use that word trumped, but trumped the free association right of the customer. So the owner owns the premises, is making the decision to serve the beer and wine or whatever, and he controls his own property. And because it was a political perspective, not a religion, and of course we could have a whole conversation of whether supporting politicians has become religious, because I think it has. An argument could be made for that. But because it was a political opinion that was being held by this guy, or at least perceived to be held by the guy they kicked out, that he had every right to do that. So the case was upheld. The bar owner has rights. He exercised those rights, and they were legally exercised. And so this is a really cool thing, not because he was a Trump guy, but because it really shows that freedom of association and the property rights of business owners matter, that they have sway. They must be considered, that these property owners have rights. And so I think it's a good thing. Now, you could go back to the gay cake bakers or the I guess you could say Christian cake bakers that didn't want to bake a cake or decorate a cake promoting a gay wedding. We've had these different things, pizza owners, all this stuff. And those seem like they would be similar, but, you know, they're not, in part because of it's not a political decision to be gay, not a political decision to erase is not a political decision. So these kinds of things are protected in any case, you can see where it's a fine line. Because, I mean, we have people that worship animals. That's their religion. I would suggest that many activist vegans are replacing, you know, they've become food and animal rights has become a religion with them that shapes every aspect of what they do and how they think their role on earth is about. So this is very religious. So, you know, politics and religion, you're not supposed to discuss them at the dinner table, they say, or in parties. But they are closely related. They're a set of beliefs, and it's where we put faith sometimes. Certainly in religious, in the case of religion, we put our faith there. That religion and faith often interchanged in terms of, you know, the idea, this is what our purpose is, yada, yada. But politics very often is mixed in with this kind of religious belief, this faith. Faith in politics, faith in government, faith if we elect, you know, just the right guy, just the right gal, everything will get better. And it's not just Americans. I mean, you know, this confusion or collusion between religious fervor and political fervor, it's not only real and common and prevalent, it's also encouraged by politicians. I mean, you know, you go back to the time of the pyramids, or you go back to many of the kings in the Middle Ages. You know, they were the god kings. They were, you know, their position was in fact religious, a religious political union, a religious political authority. So, of course, you know, our American evolution and our republic, in fact, the existence of a republic in general, even the Athenian Republic. I mean, this is where we have separated out. In these examples, we separate, you know, religion and faith from the working politics of how we will get along, how we will allocate common resources, that kind of thing. And so we in America, we have a great tradition of non-religious and the separation of church and state. Of course, that goes without saying, and it's said all the time. We were reminded constantly, separation of church and state, it's a great thing. But in actuality, and this is leads me into my second thing I want to talk about, in actuality, we as people, whether we're Americans or not, but certainly we see it in our country, we get kind of a religious fervor around our candidates, like this person will save us, and certainly from the, if you look at how the Republicans, it's much easier to look at the Republican Party and put the finger on them to say, well, you know, Christian rights, Republican moral majority, you know, that's all religion mixed with politics, and that's certainly the case. Of course, the progressives in the late 1800s, who delivered several presidents during that time frame into the White House and substantially, you know, changed the Constitution, the Prohibition Amendment, was a result of the progressive movement, which is a moral religious infusion into politics and politics as a tool for morality. This is what, you know, I mean, this is, we have a long history here. It didn't just start yesterday, and it didn't start with in the 1980s with Reagan and the moral majority and the Christian right. It didn't start there. That's an example of it, but we see it popping up all over the place. And then you have, with the Democrats, you know, you say, oh, well, the Democrats are not, they don't confuse religion with politics at all. You know, most of them aren't even religious, you'd say. Well, not true, because a party, and you could look at the Democratic Party's platform, but their platform is very much, how do we make the world a better place? How do we make the country a better place? How do we do good to the least of us? If that's not a religious goal, certainly copied from religion, from the great religions, and that's their goal, and their tool for that, of course, is government. And if you're a Democrat and you start criticizing government, you better make sure it's Republican government that you're criticizing, because it will be sacrilege for a Democrat to say government shouldn't be involved in this or that position. And if you are a Democrat and you suddenly start thinking that the government shouldn't be involved in this or that solution to make the world a better place, you're probably not going to be a Democrat for long. So we do, both parties, both major parties, we do infuse our religious fervor with our politics. Now, there is a phenomenon, a Twitter handle, maybe several Twitter handles, I'm not really sure, called QAnon. I don't know if anybody's heard of it here, but it's puttering around, and QAnon puts out the cryptic quotes and quips and statements. Q is supposed to be a high clearance, and anonymous is he doesn't say who he is or she. But it's in support of Trump, and it paints Trump, the storylines of the QAnon, paint Trump as a warrior against the deep state, which he may or may not be. And I certainly believe that there are institutional powers that are sustained regardless of who's in the White House. So if that's a deep state, I mean, I certainly buy into that. But he's presented as the guy, the warrior against the deep state, and he's fighting this battle. He has enemies all around him. And many of the things that he does are either because of the deep state forced him to, or some part of some strategy that he has that we don't know about. We haven't been communicated. The Pope knows, the bishop knows, but the people haven't been told yet what it is. But we need to relax and trust and have faith that he's solving these problems because he is so special. Anyway, getting a little religious fervor going on here. So it's human more than it is political, but both parties are extremely guilty of it. But elevating government, not elevating the business owner. I'd love to elevate the business owner, the property owner, the individual, freedom of association. Say yay or nay, do what you want, let the market decide. Let the market decide if that guy's decisions and attitudes and biases are okay or not okay. I'm all for that. But what we're really seeing is this kind of infusion of religious feelings, religious strategies, religious faith transferred onto either politicians or parties, or this ill-defined blob of government. The government will solve it. We need the government to be strong to solve it. The government will protect us from our enemies. The government knows stuff that we don't know, and so we have to trust the government. This makes me want to puke, quite frankly, but both parties are guilty of it. Both parties are guilty of it, and this phenomenon of this Twitter handle, QAnon, and it may be several. Like I said, I don't know if it's just one or multiple. It could be Roger Stone. We don't know who it is. But presenting Trump as kind of a faith warrior, you know, against many devils, it's very interesting. It's very interesting. It'd be nice if it were true. But, you know, we the people are eating this stuff up. It's a little bit concerning, but anyway, something to think about. So, Will, thanks for listening.
So much, Karen. We live in interesting times, don't we?
We sure do. Crazy, crazy interesting times.
Okay,
next time.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Anti-aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning.
We are far stronger than we were 10 weeks ago.
Hotel quarters, all hands at your battle stations.
Be nervous, count your toes. I'll do the mastermind around here.
Those who have not seen it do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Check it out every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are till I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time. Join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest to the show is Julius Alafong. Julius joins us each month from Yaoundé, Cameroon. Julius sends this note along to introduce his segment tonight. Today I am reflecting on ethnic politics practiced in Africa, its impact on elections, and the nature of the state in Africa and Cameroon. And now, Julius Alafong.
Hello, Chuck. Hello, Mike. Greetings to our listeners. When we've been reading that Cameroon is Cameroon and most post-colonial African state, tribal state, a state that had that are full of tribalism, but some people really seemed not to understand. And Cameroon being what some people call Africa in miniature, made up of so many ethnic groups, also shows a clear example of what we call a polyethnic state, a state made up of so many different little nations, or I'll call different communities. No, let me say nations, because here a nation could be referred to a group of people characterized with a common history, common religion, or more precisely, a common language. So Cameroon has so many of those languages, and consequently leading to what we can call too many different nations that made up a state. But these are little micronations. But we have two macronations, the Anglophone nation and the Francophone nation that make up Cameroon. The politics practice in Cameroon is fully ethnic oriented, not because those who create or those who go into politics want to have support only from those who come from their own area or their own micro ethnic community. For example, there is a party that was created in Cameroon, I think, in 2011 or 2012, and I think 2012, yeah, the MRC party in Cameroon. It is headed by a certain man called Professor Kamto, and he comes from the west region of Cameroon. The west region of Cameroon is made up of a community of people called the Bamileke people. And they recently had their conference regarding the upcoming presidential elections that are meant to take place in Cameroon by the end of this year. And this man, or this head of the party, Professor Kamto, was confirmed as their presidential candidate. And there has been a lot of noise making around this, because most of those, or it was realized that most of those, or let me say more than 80% of those who support this political party come from this community. And it took so many people aback, as if it is the first time for them to realize that. Then some started accusing, saying, oh, this party is a tribal party, because it is made of people who come up from that community. But then we could ask, whose fault is this? If someone creates a political party, which could be defined as a political organization with the will, or having the will, to take over power in a state and redefine policies according to its own vision and program, and it is a political, and this organization must cover the whole territory of the state, and if we go by that definition, when somebody, if I come from a particular ethnic community and I create a political party for Cameroon, for a state, it's probably because I want to touch people in all these areas. But if I go around and I preach my vision, I preach the vision of the party that has been created, and then after all these moments of going around and talking, only those from my community choose to listen to me and adhere to the party, it is not my fault. You cannot consider that as my fault. That's why some people say, but if the people from the MRC party are those who to a greater extent, like 80%+ belong to the Bamileke community, is it the fault of those who created the party? No. So this is to show us that the people of Cameroon have this view, or this vision, or this approach, that they must only, or they will only support a political party a political vision led by somebody coming from their community. So this is a fact. This is a reality. It is people choose to, people, that's how people act. That is how people react when they are faced with political, some political conflict or some political ideas, the spread of some political ideas. So once it's done, we cannot accuse those who create these political parties of being behind or being behind the tribal nature of political orientation of a state like Cameroon. So that's why some people think that for Cameroon to have some sort of a stable state, there are two things. First, the mentality of the people must change. But how can you change the mentality of people? Of how can you unify 200 plus ethnic communities with different cultures and tradition to have a common culture and tradition? That is a problem that most, that's a question most people are asking. And moreover, if we have to, if we must, we must go through that, it will mean that we have to do a lot in education. And is it possible? Some other people think that Cameroon or most African states are states that do not reflect the true nature of the African people. A state that does not respect the ethnic beliefs, the ethnic orientations of the African people. The African state is a state imported from the West to enable its exploitation by the Westerners who forcefully created the African state. Now, Cameroon is about to hold its presidential election by the end of this year. And there's a lot of hoopla going around where people are being asked to go register and vote. But some people will say, but it is not worth it. Why should people, why should someone, excuse me, why should someone go vote when he is not sure of the outcome? In other words, why will people go and vote when they are very sure that the winner of the election is known in advance? That is the incumbent, President Paul Biya. So some people say, no, there's no need voting. We are, first of all, elections were not designed for authoritarian regimes. Elections were designed for democratic regimes. Are we in a democratic regime? No. So how do we expect elections to work in a democratic regime? So if you put that in place, if you start thinking critically towards that direction, you find that it is difficult. It is practically impossible to have elections overthrow or unseat incumbents from power in most African states. And certainly in really most African states. So that's why some people don't even believe in election at all. And even if people have to vote, some many other things influence them. Yeah, the voter's choice. How do people react when voting? Yeah, after voting, is their voice or are their voices going to be taken into consideration? Those who control the state apparel, those who control our institutions, are mostly made of a group of people, are mostly a group of people coming from the community of origin of the incumbent president. So he makes it sure that he puts his people in almost all the places of control where power is being controlled, electoral power and all those things. And since they also have to protect their job, protect the advantages, financial, economic, and even power advantages, they have to do all in all for their brother in quote, because at this time they are not voting or they are not favoring a Cameroonian, they are favoring their brother from a community. So African state, to my opinion, as I've been arguing or debating for the past time, are not states that reflect the orientations of the African people. Consequently, these states are going to split up. There is going to be some sort of split up and redefinition of African state. Maybe not in the next 10, 20, or 30 years, but it's going to happen. Because what was imported is not working. It's not functioning. And the only way forward is for us to dismantle, to split, and redefine the orientation of the state, or what are the African states are supposed to be, according to the needs of Africans. And things will move better if we do it that way. Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Mike. I want to thank our listeners for being there for us tonight. I'll be back next month. Bye-bye.
And now for another episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Buddy is patrolling the War on Terror Memorial Highway in South Central Alabama. He's sitting in a grove of trees, can't see a thing. He's on Twitter, on his phone, chatting with the Kremlin. Every once in a while, he has to go stop somebody, but then it's back to the trees and Twitter. He says he believes he needs to stay in constant contact.
During his lunch hour, he goes to the busy intersection with the traffic light, parks his car in a DQ lot, then pulls out the stepladder from the bushes, climbs up on the pole, messes with the timing of the one stoplight in Bugville, making the red light last about 1 second and the green light 1 second and no yellow light, and then a different pattern the next time. And even before he gets down off the ladder, the intersection is filled with honking cars, all sideways and backwards and upside down. Buddy's a Russian spy. Stay tuned next week for next week's episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle, sponsored by Lemon Fresh Borax. Also sponsors of On Babushka, Kalashnikov's Corner, The View from My Piroshki Cart. When your dogs tell you that the Russians pooped in the hallway while you were at work, we're there for you, protecting the homeland. Lemon Fresh Borax in the fading yellow box.
The next guest of the show is Michael Annis. Michael Annis joins us each month from Denver, Colorado. Michael is a poet. He's also the executive editor of Howling Dog Press. And we're going to hear from Michael Annis in Denver right now.
Hello, Michael. Welcome to the New American Dream, and you're on the air.
Hi, Chuck. Hi, Mike. It's good to be back on the New American Dream program again. Tonight I will read the second canto from my poem, The War Between the Sons of Darkness and the Sons of Light, which is a subsection of Brave New World Order, which I've been performing on the program for the last probably 2 years. A note here, this work could be categorized as a slam poem, but it was first written and published in 1992, 25 years ahead of its time, and slam hadn't entered the cultural vernacular yet. So it's been nearly that long since I performed it, so I anticipate my stumbling over some of the words. Since its initial publication, I have revised it, adding a few current references. It should be further noted that the references to Donald Trump were in the original, thus prescient of what is going on now. And now I will begin the poem. The War Between the Sons of Darkness and the Sons of Light. Don't you hear that terrible screaming all around us, the screaming that men call silence? Werner Herzog. Who is a small man who dares build the snare of the sneering genie of Atlantic City, whose mean-spirited paw, enshrined forever in song by Woody Guthrie, was a heartless slumlord, ensuring rat-infested bedbug wonderlands of no man's land? who creates another ornamental deformity to fence the pen around money lusts of leering hearts, minds, and dead but rabid souls. Sophist beneath sophisticated machinery, his PR trucking crack and roiling hollow promises by his verbiage men. Motormouth laughs and leers at ravaged imbeciles stolen gullibly by conniving greedy, who flaunts deft wealth through holes of his sardonic teeth. Mechanical mocking onslaught masturbates few, bleeds others in their sleep, rubs her udder, shares his needle, dabbles inside prom chippy defleeced in slick magazine, lifts sip tits, bash white trash gash with slit shine teeth. Trump ignites his swollen genie, proclaims all is well, yet one out of four lives in poverty amidst 50,000 homeless in New York City, subservient to rats and roaches where neither lotto nor card games turn their plight around. Concealed in his United States of treachery by mimicry, battery-powered bright future Kmart crystal ball foretells. Pop song troubadour, son of whore, flipping rocks for rats, squeals into the night of trams and heart attacks. Missionaries gather in churches, aching out, sweet roll jungles. Coffee nods at gray tweed, spouts baseball mumbo jumbo. White bucks lounge in gospel, why endanger small talk? Much have we endured patiently, curse suburban Bible war hawks. Slip a light on for God, slip shined manicurists, rouging cheeks ruddy. Watered down message, plump pilots pluck evil from well-trimmed lawns. Psychological futility entwines the dreamscape as reality widows courage to the last man. Grief betrayed in spit-shine Cadillacs and Apple Macs, small bodies broken, thrown up on glass I-beam racks. Onyx flame shoots forth from abandoned eyes, blinded batter of terminal heartache and date rape. AIDS lottery hotly spreading, panicked thighs. Years tooled out of shallow pools where skydive suicides target wishes in a well, breaks roaring spray to play against cumbrous identity wheel. Angry screams shoot down the sluice streets, panning for God, gold, heat, guns, and cheap meat, until darkness rose out to claim them and their children's children's children for the company slums. Razored courage of wrapped night, gathered decimated words, humiliation, cruelty, prejudice, exploitation, poverty, blight, dissected brains tossed as nebulous chaff into the heart's fire, ashes for our memories eternal, Moloch never to be reborn, heartless sodomizer of children, we curse who you inspired on the carnage of a once monstrous earth, now desiccated, inflated pomposities, documents of hatred folded into paper toys. Shall we loft them, paper heartthrobs, into the bottomless chasms, so their memory is of always floating out away from our sight? What chorus churns mouths agape from below our being to devour them? Robo-priests, scythe prairies, fleece-tarred and feathered cities, hypothetical wilderness overgrown by guild and self-strangulation, fertilized by peer pressure, watered with the fear of death, evolved into a wasteland from the litter of capsized dreams. Excise the brain, spirit heaving, heart skin, leaving just capsized grin. Dormant for the day, dragons arise at night to storm deserted alleyways. Desire under the elms is a shack burning, a rope-burned body swinging sideways from a tree. Humans stacked in rows of cages try out acts on rats and roaches in the nowhere, now here. Civil disobedience awaits the CD laser to play some tunes for the million points of greed. Rich get richer and poor get substance abuse to deaden pain. Whips the crack over tiny mushroom clits inside rusty cans and Ziploc twats. Rushing crown of mushroom clouds raised with pride. Span lofty heights, rain cinder blocks and dark lung spots. X-rated, masked, exacerbated, exasperated, mated through fate, boiled down the drains of singles columns. Anneal lips congeal balls and ovum as hair separates from skin, blood from bones, faith from whim. Extirpated, addlepated, slain in the reign of the trickle-down theory. Benefactors piss in the mouths of the hopelessly human, insane with thirst. trickle down tickles parched throats with streams of unconsciousness, premeditated gibberish. Sufferers hugging the baggage of our isolated, ignorant moment, all paying homage, tithing storage to commissioned thieves. Saints talking us down off mental ledges of desire aversion, riding the tiger, hip-hop around loonies, dancing frenetically with adversaries, needing more museums, more islands, more zoos, more websites and grave sites for suicide with dignity, Alcatraz and Attica, Sing Sing and San Quentin, Saudi Arabia and Ukraine, international monuments to others, human suffering, whitewashed misaffairs in human understanding, crowded water closets, mismanaging human despair, animal enslavement, inadequacies, and broken dreams. America's fields unroll, blinding sea from sliming sea, from its chalice of impotence, agony to our lips, past communion, vampires waft from incense, party animals, banks, dick, the farmers only.com, starving daughters, savings and loans, slicking survivors, more lean times in the hereafter. BCCI gangbanks, the harlot with laundered cocaine billions. Free sex and free lunch, assault, massive human rights, arousal violations. Redheaded B-actor, our new father, Moloch smiles behind the CEO bushes, YouTubing down the principally moneyed streams of self-righteous consciousness. Man of a thousand racist faces still grins at stillbirth from inside the white throne. Residually sanctions greed for America. Kinder and gentler in the name of greed. Greedy in the name of good, kindly ousted. Greedy for fame of their pseudo-gentle acts, roasted and boasted. Greedily greedy in God's name for the rich and famous to trample down their desultory vintage, letting life style the poor and anonymous. Greedy for slick corporate approbation, greedy for media renovation, greedy for the jet set to stream stardom above the dreamy greed of urban nothing on probation. Urban renewal, hot rocking tailwinds whisper the wake of greed street and avenues. Greedily adopt the homeless and lifeless to show what a little greed can do in a sub-greedy world. Greedily be a hammer, not a nail, succeed, not fail. Greedy suburban tykes, thumb dykes, greedy for dumb and retarded, lame and discarded to succumb to yuppie grand dreams of greedy apartheid. Greedy for grand dragon to breathe fire into righteous white parishes. Greed greases the common greed. Greedy greetings curl corners on the market as corners of the mouth fight greedily, smile heavenward. Schools shoot out slurred slogans. One nation under greed got crack, smack, meth, and speed. Drives us away from the old and weak, shattered in greedy, tattered shawl shelters. Greedily removes us from the disinherited, the walking slain, men now, once precious babes, sucking greedily on the old, bitter nipple. Greedily drink wine, drink kerosene and wood alcohol. Greedily sniff glue, pop horse tranquilizers. Greedily shuffling along, head sparkling clouds of silver spray paint. Greedy human gold ingots, cockeyed and ambling, floating in a ghost ship. In make-believe doldrums, their greed warmed over in a breeze, circulating humdrums inside inflated plastic skin. Nose to the greed stone, heads up the greedy tailbone, you and eyes, myth eyeline, green bumper stiffens, greed us. He who dies with the most toy wins. Weaving crochets, greed world of fabric of gloating greed sex.
Thank you.
right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Decentralization and bank and annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, Mycoin, Yourcoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more.
The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fist clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and hallelujah. While they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. Construction is underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with a message. Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplice after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. Well, after the Winter Olympics in Ping Pong, South Korea, everyone kind of split and went their own way. Mark, the most dangerous blogger on earth, went somewhere. Who knows, maybe back to the basement. Randall from Stevens Point was spotted in Baraboo. And the Bubbas have continued on their I Just Won a RV on the Price is Right World Tour, headed out of South Korea, headed to Damascus, is what the word is. Well, Cosmo and Imelda Nutt, after having bowled at ping pong pints and pins against the Korean President Moon Sung-jung Il Hung Lo and Mrs. Hung Lo, boarded Air Force One for a bowling tournament in Atchison, Kansas. For weeks they had been in Atchison, Kansas at the Midwest Bowling Congress, and now the Nutts have returned to the White House, tired, still wearing the same shirts of their sponsor, Ali's House of Jihad, because they'd been told they should always wear them as respect for their sponsor. They had lost in the last frame of the championship match to Carl's Discount Online Surgical Supplies of Emporia, and left Atchison by Greyhound bus the same afternoon, having not been back to Washington since they quickly organized a big Dollar Signs, Boobs, and Tanks festival to replace the traditional Cherry Blossom festival. Cosmo lugged the second-place trophy down the helicopter steps and saluted the Marine with it, and conked himself in the forehead, but nobody saw. Yeah, I know, right? Everybody saw. Then they hurried inside, because they needed to organize this week's camo ball, this time in the Rose Garden. The Child Left Behind and Skippy the construction worker and self-taught on YouTube demolition expert have been carrying boxes all this time of secrets from the basement maintenance of secrets office out to the street on Pennsylvania Avenue, where they set the boxes open to the wind and let the papers fly wherever they may. People everywhere were picking up the papers, reading them out loud and running to show them to others. They found one box full of bits of paper torn up but still readable. Gulf of Tonkin, Sinking of Maine, Weapons of Mass Destruction, Incubators. And this one particular full piece of paper, the Child Left Behind held it up and said, "Hey, look." Skippy the construction worker, self-taught on YouTube demolition expert, said, "Go ahead, read it out loud." The reason that thermite and cordite tested positive and was found everywhere on 9/11 is because there was no jet fuel, because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that jet fuel tested negative at all four crash sites on 9/11 is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the WTC Towers 1 and 2, which were each 110 stories high of reinforced concrete and steel covering 1 acre for each floor, which was then turned into a pile of dust standing only 2 stories high from a fuel fire, a first in world history, was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason CDI, Controlled Demolition, Inc., a demolition company, even though there was no piece of building debris larger than what could fit onto their existing trucks, the reason they were paid $35 billion to clean up 9/11, similar to what the U.S. government paid CDI after the OK City bombing in 1995, and was seen in and around the WTC's and the OK City Murrah building for weeks and months prior to 9/11 in April 1995, was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason everyone smelled cordite and not one person smelled any of the 12,000 gallons of toxic jet fuel at the Pentagon was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason none of the 600 FBI agents at the Pentagon were wearing masks, even though 12,000 gallons of fuel had just been released, was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the Naude brothers have not been seen since 9/11, even though they were related to the fire company they just so happened to be filming on 9/11 to capture the only supposed video of the first plane of 9/11, because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the FAA boss destroyed the tape testimony of the 3 air traffic controllers immediately following 9/11, which basically said they could not have been for commercial planes, well, it's because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason 16 supposed Saudi Arabian men who averaged 5'4", 120 pounds with 1-inch knives could hijack 4 planes without a single mayday or hijacking code being entered by a single pilot on 9/11 was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that all 8 6-ton, 9-foot-wide titanium alloy engines disappeared, a first in world history, and it happened 8 times on 9/11, have never been physically verified since. It's because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason $15 billion was paid out to the U.S. airline companies within 2 weeks of 9/11 was because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the airline insurance companies have yet to pay a single penny to replace a single plane from 9/11, which, by the way, they only pay by debris verification, because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason it is now against U.S. law to investigate or even contact the exact people who took the supposed man from the street films, photos, and videos of planes in 9/11 is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason you will never have any truly independent investigation of 9/11 is because your legal system is owned by the same murderers, and there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that everything will be kept in secrecy with regard to any legal procedures, covered with terms like national security, even though the entire planet supposedly saw it, and any court cases will all have gag orders and be closed to the public, is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason the families will never ask for verification of plane debris for any of the four planes from any of the four locations on 9/11 is because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11. The reason that not one single family member gave or demanded a DNA sample or independent test from the planes of 9/11, which means authorities could never have matched the DNA as positive from the Pentagon Flight 77 without a sample from the family, because there were no commercial plane crashes on 9/11.
Join us next week for yet another episode of The Americans, when we will see Cosmo Nutt still pondering whether he should take up professional pie eating or start up his own weekly podcast, Dollar Signs, Tanks, and Boobs.
Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, at the end of the Empire. Tonight, at the Moonrock Lake Public Library, they will be reading from the best-selling book by Moonrock Lake self-published author and dog catcher, Solomon Sendak, entitled Sweat, Global Warming in a Small Town, and Other Tales of the Great American Eastern Middle West. An excerpt is kindly sent to us by Moonrock Lake Public Librarian Doris Morris. Well, anyway, there was a town, Jennifer Junction, not too far from Moonrock Lake, that had a warming scare not too long ago. The story's all about the folks in Jennifer Junction, Tommy, Robert S. Thompson, and the waitress, and Carl with his college in his basement, and Guttner and Jesse in the old people grain elevator casino, and the radio station wanting everyone to wear sweatpants to stick a middle finger in the air to global warming. And then, sort of like the Lindbergh baby, sort of not, the Sox baby has been stolen. Maybe by that Laverna, the woman at the bank drive-up. Maybe by the Foos who own Foos Foods. Maybe not. Jesse and Carl are trying to capture the Foos because they think they took Sweat Sox, the baby of the coach's teacher's couple who named their kids Sweat because it, life, is all about giving 100%. And grunting and working up a lather. Guttner and Ron Waters in the light blue Robin's Egg blue pickup are chasing Steve, the incredible pizza dude, all around town because they think he took Sweat Sox. Things tend to get complicated quickly in a small town when you're not that used to complicated things. Anyway, let's get back to our story, huh? It's kind of steamy. Not like daytime TV, like sweaty, like hot and sweaty, like moisture under your arms and other places. Sweat, overall ubiquitous, omnipresent, universal global warming in a small town. Hello, Robert S. Thompson, reporting from the flood area. You've heard it said, the saying, if the creek don't rise, well, the goddamn creek has risen. There's water running down every gutter in Jennifer Junction. As for now, my bench appears safe, but for how long? Jenny Creek has filled and overflowed, no thanks to the melting North and South Poles, and a chunk of Greenland broken off and free in the Atlantic, the size of Uruguay, the Channel 14 weatherman finally tells us. My toes are wet. How nice. Here we go. No one can find the big sweats. Many of our children, our citizens, have been forced by circumstances to form improvised gray sweatpants with a red script Fighting Angus logo out of bed sheets, overhead awning, Boy Scout tents, parachutes, whatever's at hand. Not the same. Maybe it has something to do with Jenny Creek. Hard to think rationally with minnows and carp swimming past. Not normal. Nothing will stay frozen either. Not in the meat freezer at Tim and Tony's. Not in the refrigerators and back porch freezers in any of the homes. Some people have taken to wearing 6 and 7 pairs of sweatpants to try to reverse events. Well, no more by the end of the week, I would imagine. Guttner and the gray sweats have intensified their efforts to capture Steve. So much is happening. The Fighting Angus lost to Jason Junction last night, 5-4. Our Fighting Cowettes were victorious, 9-2. Professor Carl and Jesse almost had the foos, but they got away. The two sleuths waited in the fire truck in the alley behind the foo home, all the lights off in the vehicle except the interior ceiling light. It was about midnight, maybe a little after, when they coasted up. They stared in at the foos seated at the kitchen table in the big kitchen window facing the alley, talking, just talking. They kept conversing, talking with each other, back and forth. That's how Jesse described it in his debriefing. Mary Wu, then Lorenzo, or Larry, back, forth. The professor and Jesse took a break to split up a ho-ho for snack, when all of a sudden in Jesse's window, and also in Carl's window, the foos, just standing there, looking over, leaning over like they do, looking in, smiling. Ah, said Jesse and Carl. How do you do, says Mary Wu. Jesse said, fine, and I think Carl nodded, surreptitiously slipping his bag of ho-ho into his mouth, lest it be the last normal food he sees for years. The foos invited Jesse and Carl in for jelly sandwiches and milk. Jesse and Carl walked up to the house with their hands laced behind their heads. Jesse and Carl didn't leave till morning. Larry Foo gave Jesse a jump with the trailblazer. Then he and Mary Wu just stood in the alley holding the jumper cables, waving at Carl and Jesse as they drove away down the alley. I guess the foos are no longer suspects in the Sox baby case. The foos did not know the Sox had a baby, since they're always working. They would also like to get a Korean baby sometime, they said. And there they go. That's the third time they've gone by, not stopping for the light. Old ladies, dog, nothing. Guttner, Ron Waters, and the light blue robin's egg pickup. They're chasing Steve, the incredible pizza dude, all around town. Pizza Man has attained a sort of cult status around town as the dude who would not die because he was able somehow to escape being captured during delivering the cheese small thin crust, which is now on permanent display in the front desk case at the library. Behind Guttner was Don in the black and white with the lights flashing. Sirens, of course, full blast. Windows down so he can smoke during the pursuit. I heard later that Jesse and Carl would hear all that was going on down where they were sitting on the foos front porch with Mary Wu and Lorenzo, too. They were drinking shots of Jack Daniels with water crescents and Twinkie slices. Jesse said it's Mandarin cuisine. Steve stopped at a light and some old people tossed, jumped in the back seat. He was zipping and sliding and swerving, coasting through stop signs. He was busy. Like that song my grandpa had him play at his funeral. Faster horses, younger women, bigger sweatpants, more pizza. I'm sitting here balancing on my bike with my foot on Robert S. Thompson's bench. Robert S. is talking to Nora, who came back for her cigarette break. She heard all the commotion. You think they're just about to catch him when he puts it in that extra jap gear, says Robert. He doesn't see him, says Nona. He's in the zone, I say. When he's busy, it's total Buddhist attachment. When it's over, he'll be like he just woke up. It's unconscious, like a basketball player who can't miss from anywhere on the court. Confidence, says Robert S. Thompson. Watch her roar past again. Nona took out a cigarette, offered it to Robert. He took it. She offered her lighter, too. How are you doing through all this? Some of our NASCAR buffs came out to stand in the streets and on the roofs and hoods of their pickups. Ron in the morning was giving up play-by-play each time they roared past the radio station big window. The bar started happy hour 5 hours early. And just as Rick Waters was unloading a big brown box with a Made in Japan stamp on the top and sides from a stone black SUV with darkened windows, Steve in the newly customized pizza car with a spinning pizza on top squealed once more around the Main Street four corners. He went right between two sets of elderly chicken fighters holding each other on their shoulders. They do that in the pool and everywhere now. I guess it's the new thing in the middle of the street. He rammed the curb and the impact threw him way left, just missing the front window sweatpants display in Rick's sporting goods store. Rick did not see Steve's flying spinning pizza mobile. He just sliced open the big box from Nagasaki with 24 Infinity X sumo sweatpants with a customized Fighting Angus logo under the waistband. Rick held up a pair in front of him like a toreador to examine the new stock. Right behind Steve came Guttner in the city truck, like a bull, right through the sweats into Rick. The truck shoved Rick all the way through the store, slamming into the rear concrete wall. Behind him came Don in the cruiser, a windshield smeared thick with blood. Don had been unable to miss the four old people. A police car cut the old guys off at the waist, flinging them and their lovely ladies onto the windshield, bouncing high and then smacking the pavement. When you see it for real, it's a lot faster, worse sounding and looking than just trying to imagine it. When you just think about something like that, your mind shows it to you way slowed down to make it not so bad, but it's very bad. So the denouement, as Carl says, is that Rick Waters was crushed against the concrete wall by Guttner's city pickup. He broke his back, or rather, Guttner broke Rick's back and hips, and he, Rick, got a concussion where he was goofy for a while. His tongue swelled way up. But the boxes and boxes of size small sweatpants along the mall probably saved his life. They took him by helicopter to Jeremy Junction. And the helicopter radio is tuned to My Midget Music Hour, is what I hear. All four of the old people ended up dying in the middle of the street. Gunslingers laid low by new technology. Their heads exploded like smashed watermelons. Jesse came in a hurry in the fire truck to try to help. So did William in the ice cream appendectomy-mobile. Then they buried the old dead people that Don hit with the cruiser. Don's not going to jail. He didn't even lose his job. Got a promotion to two-star sheriff. That's a new one on me. He got a new cruiser. The insurance paid off. This one's got a cattle catcher on it. Folks love it. They point and smile, glad that somebody finally stood up to the old people. Rick's in a body cast. All he can get on are sweatpants. He sits in a chair in front window of his store. He's got wide eyes. They say he's still got a concussion. If you walk up close, you can see he's got a shotgun on the floor by his chair. My feeling is he's going to shoot the first pickup that jumps the curb. Baby Sweat. Well, yeah, they did let Laverna go. She wasn't too happy. She's back at the bank drive-up. Some people see larceny in her eyes when they pull up. Some see murder. Some see lust. Some see a Luxembourg mountain sheep. I see pain. Real hurt. I guess there wasn't a baby Sweat Socks. They made it up. They wanted a baby so bad they just talked themselves into being pregnant. They talked about it to themselves and to other people. Then when they had to have it, because it was time, and then they couldn't have it go to school because there wasn't a kid. And they didn't want it to die because that was way too sad. So they decided to have it be kidnapped. They thought it would go away eventually. But, well, you know, that could never happen in a small town. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Thank you, Mike. And good night.
Thank you, Chuck, for all you do, all the interviews, the technical guru stuff, everything that makes this show possible. And thanks to our guests, Michael Annis, Karen Katowski, Julius Alifong, Phil Ferruccio, and Frank Cordero. If you'd like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawkstrom. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Slow down, you're moving too fast. You got to make the morning last, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy. Da 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 da, feeling groovy. And the lamppost, what you knowin'? Come watch your flowers growing. Ain't you got no rhyme for me? Do do do, feeling groovy. Da 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 da, feeling groovy. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
What do you see? Homes being foreclosed. People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country is founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means. This is our bank. This is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this
justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart. You can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves